Welcome everyone to this new release of the Education for Climate Talks. I'm Clément Denigo. I'm working at the Joint Research Center of the European Commission. And I'm very glad today to welcome on board with us for this new talk, Kari Kivinen. Welcome, Kari. So we are going to talk with you about a very important topic, which is, let's say, misinformation at large. But I want to present you before we start. It will be long because you've been doing so many things in your career, Kari. So basically, at the moment, currently you're working as an education outreach expert in the EUPO Observatory. So EUPO is European Union Intellectual Property Office, based in Alicante in Spain, and you're working in that observatory that leads the Intellectual Property in Education project and network. So you've been doing so many things, as I was saying before, doing 30 years of work experience in teaching, managing international and multicultural schools in Finland, Luxembourg and Belgium, because you've been the Secretary General of the European Schools for years. You've been involved in so many projects, and also projects with the Joint Research Center, by the way, in developing new competencies for the competence framework DICOMP 2.2. But what is most important for us in a way today about your experience is that you've been working also as an expert in the group that was set up by the European Commission on tackling disinformation, on promoting digital literacy through education and training. And today, as a matter of fact, you combine your work at the EUPO with lecturing on media, on information literacy, digital information literacy, intellectual property education, and curriculum development. So, Kari, with you today, we would like to understand better what's at stake out there. There's a new landscape for sure, which is very complex when it comes to information, and a lot of teachers, educators like us, and students, of course, in particular, are struggling concretely with the information to be sure, of course, to distinguish, of course, the one which is accurate to the one which is not accurate. So we're talking here about more into the detail of the terms themselves. We're talking about misinformation, disinformation, malinformation. So maybe it would be good to start from there and to understand better what we're talking about and basically what's the situation when it comes to misinformation at large. Please, Kari.
Thanks for a long introduction. And I'm happy to share with you the information I have about these issues. According to the European definition of information disorder, indeed, misinformation is a mistake. All the newspapers make mistakes. All the teachers make mistakes. We all make mistakes. And it's spread without bad intentions. So it can be corrected afterwards. In the journalists have a habit to correct with a little text on the back page of the magazine the wrong information. So misinformation is that. I have to say that in states, misinformation concerns all the false news and all the so it's used like you used in the introduction. Disinformation is a lie. It's a wrong information which is spread intentionally, knowing that it's wrong information. And very often there are commercial, religious, political, whatsoever reasons to spread this wrong information. And unfortunately, this disinformation is increasing really a lot in the online environment at this very moment. So the malinformation is less known. It's kind of maybe correct information which is spread in order to harm a person or organization. I mean, we all have issues we don't want to talk publicly, and the malinformation is spreading information to put us in a bad light. We have been in different projects working with these concepts, with the even starting from primary. And when you say that misinformation is a mistake, disinformation is a lie, and malinformation is a nasty gossip or maybe hate speech, they understand perfectly the issue. In the European level, according to Eurobarometer, 70% of the European citizens they get across of this information disorder content often, and 80% think that it's a problem, and 81% think that it's a problem for democracy. If we are looking students, according to PISA, about half of the pupils have been taught how to deal with disinformation. About 40% think that they should have been taught more. And when testing, very often young persons who are very skillful users of devices and applications, they are failing to analyze correctly the online content. So it's a problem. And we are working against tackling disinformation in many fields.
Okay, so thank you. We understand better now. By the way, I was reading an article yesterday about an expert playing with the new ChatGPT and was answering some very rude questions, to the question it was making. And it was precisely saying that he could hurt that person by playing with the information or hurting him because of the information. So that would be a terrible malinformation process. But anyway, so you've been working now for years with your peers in different settings. So I was mentioning the expert group set up by the European Union on misinformation. So what would be the main policy recommendations you would like to share with the members of our community?
So already the DISCOM 2.2 is addressing the main targets. I mean, we have these ambitious targets that 80% of the European citizens are having basic digital skills, which include, as a very important first part, the capacity of evaluating online information and how to say, sorting out what information is correct and what is not correct. It's kind of basic skill. In the expert group tackling disinformation, we worked with 25 experts for 1 year. We went through really many studies. We tried to find what is really the evidence based on different actions. We came to the quite positive conclusions, so that the disinformation can be tackled, digital literacy can be taught, and the students can learn to use tech and digital environment critically and responsibly. But we have to do something, we have to act. It's also that found out that that digital skills can be assessed, which is important for the teachers to know. But I've been in another working group where it's a Stanford University coordinated group. Because most of the public of this platform are probably science teachers. It's about science education in the age of misinformation. And we came to the conclusion that the digital information literacy skills are useful, but you need to have a good subject knowledge. The better you know your subject, for example, physics or chemistry or biology, the less you are vulnerable for the disinformation on that area, which is a good message for the teachers that you are doing excellent work. And it's kind of giving competencies of fighting against disinformation. On the other side, we noticed that maybe it should be good for the science teachers to give tools for the students who are looking information from the online environment. And they get all kind of claims, how to evaluate scientific claims. It's something fundamental, and I think that we don't spend enough time on that. And how to evaluate the expertise of the expert. Who is really the expert? One can be a Nobel Prize winner in one area, but totally incompetent in another area. So these are the issues our report is highlighting for the teachers, that these issues should be discussed in the classroom more. On top of that, there is a hint for education providers that in PISA 2025, there will be a new competence, how to evaluate and use scientific information for decision making. And I think that now it would be good time of starting to practicing it.
Absolutely. So I appreciate very much that evidence-based approach. And so we will keep in touch, Gary, because you might come back to us and share with us new conclusions. Let's try to go down to earth in a way, and we were teachers together. When you are facing the reality of such a problem of misinformation with your students, which is the case for students alone at home, for instance, I mean, we are a bit distant from, of course, the very high level policy recommendations. So what would you like to share with the members of our community, teachers and students in particular, on tips, I should say, basic recommendation you would like to give them? So when it comes to misinformation, disinformation or malinformation?
So the first tip is that teachers should listen to their students, create moments, safe moments where there is a discussion about online behavior, online application use, online research. And what happens normally is that teachers feel that they are not as competent as their pupils in the social media, and they are kind of avoiding to talk about it. Students, they want to show that they are absolutely brilliant creators and users of applications, and they don't want to show their weak points. So somehow one has to break the ice. For example, doing a Kahoot, asking what platforms do you use, have you confronted with the anonymous things, in order to raise the discussion in the classroom. And once you have the discussion, you will kind of get to the point. You can start helping, because that's the first thing. The second thing is that sometimes it's good to invite a journalist or an expert to the class to tell. I mean, the most unbelievable things I have had when I was a headmaster, that a lawyer came to class and students had so many questions about what happens if I use a wrong identity? Is it a crime? What happens if there were a lot of questions and it was very good discussion which led to the information and spreading of disinformation? But what is maybe the most important message for all of us, students and teachers, is that I've been working last 7 years with the fact-checking organization called Fakta Bari. We have made studies and all kind of research, and we have noticed that we need traffic rules in online environment, simple rules. And the most important thing is that when you see a claim which is emotional, creating strong emotions, or which seems to be a little bit suspicious or a little bit surprising, stop, take time, think twice. And when the moment you are kind of before you are liking or sharing or commenting it, go through at least 3 key questions. So can you find who is behind this information? Is there a name? Is it coming from the respectful scientific journal or well-known magazine? Second, what evidence does it show? Check the evidence. And third, check with other sources. Do they confirm that finding? And when you use these 3 simple questions, you can save a lot of harm from yourself and shame, because nobody wants to get fooled and nobody wants to share false information. And it's as simple as it.
So that would be a perfect conclusion. So identify the source, check the evidence, and look for another source. Thank you so much, Gary. Anyway, the discussion doesn't stop there, far from it. We will share with you in the comment of the video on our platform some other information. We will share certainly the reports you were referring to before. I thank you again, and I'm sure we'll have the occasion to meet again and to discuss the policy recommendation you're going to read. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you very much.